How did Christian communities in the past respond to godless cultures? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Embracing Godly Character, The Christian Community's Response to a Godless Culture. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Embracing Godly Character at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Embracing Godly Character, 1-800-325-3040.
That's being the spot. In my religion.
Where did these ideas come from? That there are no fixed truths, no fixed standards or morals. Where did the idea come from that you, in an essentially meaningless world, you're meaningless yourself until you create your own meaning? That may be your own identity, it may be your own truth, your own morality, it may be your own purpose in life, but it's a blank slate that is determined by nothing other than your will. Where did these ideas come from? How long have they been around, and how do we counter them in a culture that has been overtaken by these kind of nonsensical ideas? Are they built into a bigger worldview? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to begin a conversation on nihilism. That's the worldview we're really talking about here. A two-part conversation with Dr. Angus Manous, professor and chairman of the Department of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, president of the Evangelical Philosophical Society. Dr. Manous, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thanks for having me, Todd.
Are we seeing an increase in nihilism? If so, can you give us an example or two of that?
I think that we're seeing a rise of materialistic understandings of human beings, according to which we're only animals and we don't have any overarching purpose or meaning in life. We're seeing a rise, according to the Pew American Religious Survey landscape of 2014, of the unaffiliated, the nuns, who really don't think that any definite religious doctrines are true, and so they view religion primarily as therapeutic. So they don't actually believe that there are true boundaries of value, meaning, and purpose. And we also see that there's a rise of despair. We have a rising suicide rates in the U.S., and although there are a number of causes for these, and people cite stress and opioid abuse and so on, I think part of it is that people have come to think that their lives don't have value or meaning or purpose.
So give us a simple definition of nihilism.
Nihilism basically is the doctrine that there is no intrinsic meaning, value, or purpose to life. And perhaps the crispest statement of it came from the pen of Friedrich Nietzsche in Twilight of the Idols, where he said, having looked at the world from a materialistic perspective, there are altogether no moral facts. Morality is merely an interpretation of certain phenomena, more precisely, a misinterpretation. So it's in denial that there is an objective meaning, purpose, or value that's out there to discover. And so then what's left is merely the constructions of the individual or a society, which we then saw developed by subsequent philosophers, the existentialist philosophers who came after Nietzsche, like Albert Camus and Jean-Paul Sartre, and then the postmodern philosophers like Jacques Derrida.
So to what do we trace this idea that there's nothing to be known or that can be known?
The biggest origin of it really is this underlying materialistic framework, because what materialism does is it denies the validity of final causes. Aristotle recognized that you would have the efficient cause, what produces something, the material cause, what's made of something, and also, though, the formal cause, its shape or structure, but most important, he said, is the final cause, that for the sake of which it's done. And human activity finds its meaning in that final cause, right? So if you're preparing a medicine, the material cause might be the chemical ingredients. The efficient cause is the the chemist, the formal cause, the formula or structure, but the final cause is the most important, to cure some ailment. That's really the deeper why of why you're doing it. But if, in fact, we are simply the byproduct of the blind watchmaker thrown up by naturalistic evolution, we're not here for a purpose, then there is no ultimate why. And the defenders of natural selection say that it's a process that doesn't have any goals or purposes or intentions. And so then man just shows up, and Jean-Paul Sartre says, well, we exist, and now we have to make our own essence. This is so very different from the biblical worldview, according to which there is a purpose before we even exist, as we see, for example, in Jeremiah 1:5, where it says that God knew Jeremiah before he was born. Or we read in Ephesians 2:8-10 that there are good works that we are created in Christ Jesus to perform, so we have a sense of meaning and purpose that's objective and that is not just simply constructed by us.
What philosopher or thinker would you point to as one who kind of took this to its logical or perhaps illogical conclusion?
Probably initially Nietzsche himself takes it to the extreme, where he has the parable of the madman showing up and saying, you know, that modern Enlightenment Europe had, for all practical purposes, denied the existence of God, but thought that it could continue for a while with moral standards. And he says, no, if you take away God, there is no center, there is no foundation. The way he puts it is, there is no up or down anymore. There's no way to orient yourself. And of course, Dostoevsky then saying that without God, anything is permissible. And so this thinking is taken up by subsequent existentialists like Camus and Sartre, and in postmodern thought as well. But really the architect of this point of view, I would say, is Nietzsche.
What kind of impact did that initially have when these ideas were first being introduced? And then we'll talk about its cultural impact today. What would you kind of lay at the doorstep of this nihilism in terms of its cultural impact?
It's a slow impact at first, because what human beings do is they live on borrowed capital. So we just had Dr. Paul Copan speak on our campus, and we view civilization as like a house that we walk into. We don't ask too many questions about how it got there. And in fact, Nietzsche's madman realizes from the incredulous stares, I'm too early. People haven't yet realized what it means to deny the existence of God as a source of meaning for their life. They don't want quickly to accept that what that means is that you're cut adrift. And all that you can do is exactly what Jean-Paul Sartre later on said. You have to construct your own life according to your own choices. And in effect, then, man has to determine his own subjective meaning. So it took several decades before the real implications of Nietzsche's ideas really became apparent in the work of the mid-20th century existentialists.
This is part one of a two-part conversation on nihilism. Dr. Angus Manoogian is our guest professor and chairman of the Department of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, president of the Evangelical Philosophical Society. He'll also be making the case against scientism at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois, about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Check it out at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. When we come back, according to nihilism, then, if we have to invent our own meaning, our own purpose in life, what is the source of it? Just what? Our imagination? We'll find out after this.
What is a pietist? Do Lutherans fast? When our faith and our feelings go to war, who wins? Can a hymnal enrich your prayer life? What can medieval pilgrims teach Christians today about devotion? Find answers to these questions and more in the March issue of The Lutheran Witness. Subscribe to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's flagship magazine at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about nihilism, beginning a conversation with Dr. Angus Manoogs, president of the Evangelical Philosophical Society. Dr. Manoogs, before the break, you were talking about how nihilism posits that the only purpose or meaning there can be in life, not only in life writ big, but in an individual's life, has to kind of be invented or created by the individual. So what is the source of that? Is it just one's own imagination? What is the source of that meaning or that purpose in life according to nihilism?
Right, and that's the problem. Because on the one hand, Sartre will say, no, it's just a matter of authenticity. You make a choice and you stick to it. You can choose to be a soldier. You can choose to be a pacifist. You can choose anything, and the only value is authenticity. But later on, Sartre says, well, suppose that you're a military commander and you command an attack and all your men are killed. You're especially forlorn, he says, because you cannot turn to God if you have denied his existence. But what's interesting that Sartre doesn't comment on is, why is the man forlorn at all? Isn't it because he realizes that though he made a choice, he made the wrong choice? And so even when you explore some of Sartre's own examples, you begin to see that there's a natural law that creeps in, that you see that existentialists, in fact, do, just like anybody else, regret their decisions. And his wife, Simone de Beauvoir, pointed this out. After all, if we really value just choice, then can't some people use their choice to extinguish the choice of others, as the Nazis did? And so then she begins to say, no, you have to make a choice that affirms the choices of other people as well. Well, of course, that is to recognize a universal value. So when you start to think through existentialists in practice, they end up, I think, always trying to help themselves to some values that go beyond mere choice. It's very difficult to take seriously someone who thinks that they found meaning by choosing kindness and care, like Mother Teresa. But on the other hand, they could equally well have chosen to be a torturer or a mass murderer, and that would be equally meaningful. It's hard to believe that they really believe that's true.
How do we see the impact of nihilism then in culture today?
I'd say we see it really in the triumph of the will, the idea that everything is something that we can choose currently to a ridiculous extent, right? Because we now not only have people who claim that they can be a different gender than their sex, but also we're starting to hear accounts of people who would choose to identify with a different race. And one wonders, where is this going to end? For example, could I say that, well, I've discovered this morning that there is an inner hippopotamus that's trapped inside of me, and that really now the only solution is for me to have suitable surgical adjustments and a lifestyle, you know, befitting of a hippopotamus. So you see it, I think, in this delusional idea that we can actually become, there's a great paper by Oswald Beyer on this, that we can actually become self-creators. We have fallen so in love with our choice that we think that we can choose to be different kinds of beings. We see that as well with some of the more extreme rhetoric of the transhumanist agenda, where it's not just that they claim, well, you could be fitted with technology that would enhance your powers in some way, which is no doubt true, but that somehow you could become a higher level of being, as if enhancing our functional powers somehow means that we've transcended being a human person.
Is nihilism a workable worldview? Does it function as a worldview?
I think the answer is clearly no. We keep bumping into boundaries. So the forlornness of Sartre's officer is a good example. What he really understood is that he made the wrong decision. So morality isn't just a matter of decision. There are numerous cases of people who've had the surgery to make their bodies look like a different gender, and then their psychological problems have continued, and in some cases they've wanted to have the process reversed. This seems to show that there's a problem here. People are not accepting the truth about their creaturely limitations, and it really is a sign of maturity to accept that there are certain things that you cannot do. You see it, for example, in padded resumes, where you say, well, I can be the person I want. So they add things on their resumes, and they get a job. Eventually, though, they actually have to have the skill that they put in the resume. They can't do it, and they're fired. And so reality has an awkward way of intruding on these self-chosen schemes, these kind of designer lifestyles that people choose.
So I take it that nihilism as a worldview is not livable. It cannot be a consistent guide to live in a sensible way in the world.
Yeah, you have to recognize some external values. That's the path of wisdom, that if you don't recognize that some things are objectively good and you start to say, well, I'll construct my own, you will find that there is a sort of a natural punishment system. So if you decide to take on a vocation that you're not suited for because you say, well, that would be good for me in some relativistic sense, but if you really don't have those abilities, then you won't flourish and you're going to be frustrated. I think a good example of this is the idea of self-realization, that if you have strong desires, certain psychologists have said, well, you ought to realize them. But the Bible, I think, has more wisdom here. It says in James that our desires are at war with one another. We're not consistent even in what we want. You know, I would, for example, like to lose weight by fine dining, and I would like to enjoy all the sophistication of the town while living in the quiet countryside. And so if you say to somebody, follow your desires, well, which ones? They conflict. You cannot realize all of them, because if you follow any one of them, it's going to exclude others. So what you desperately need is some standard that's outside of you, and then you learn through maturity to condition your desires so that they actually achieve that standard, just as an athlete does, right? The Bible used that figure of the athlete disciplining himself in order to win the crown. Well, that's because winning is objective. There's a standard of winning. And likewise, there is a standard of human flourishing. you first need to figure out what that is. What is it for a being to really become fulfilled in his or her potential? And then you have to adjust your desires accordingly to try and meet that goal.
What does nihilism do when writ large on communities?
I think what it's doing right now is it's causing intractable conflict between people, because people are defining their rights in terms of their wants. So right now, we have demands for a right to life and a right to die. We have more and more concerns about freedom of religion and religious liberty, but also equally strident claims that we should have freedom from religion. There are so many competing demands, and the reason is people are identifying their moral rights simply in terms of the interests of their own group. In other words, they're going back simply to an assertion of the will, just as Nietzsche predicted. And the trouble is, of course, people have incompatible desires, and so this is a recipe for conflict. With one side jockeying for its own advantage, well, then other people feel oppressed and gouged by the first decision, and so then they come up with another proposal. And what this is, in the end, is a falling away to Hobbes's state of nature, which he describes as a state of a war of all against all. And what causes the war is simply that it's a contest of incompatible wills. What we desperately need is for people to come to their senses and to recognize a transcendent, higher, and common good, which we find preeminently in Jesus Christ. Because here we have an example of a source of values that is transcendent, but also who gives his love to all and his direction to all people. It's fair. He doesn't come as somebody self-interested. He doesn't come to be served, but to serve. Here you have a standard where it isn't about him coming into the world to secure his own interests by imposing his will on other people. Rather, he subordinates his will to the Father's will, and all for our sake. He actually puts the good of humanity before his own good.
Dr. Angus Manoogian is professor and chairman of the Department of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and president of the Evangelical Philosophical Society. Dr. Manoogian, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options for an associate's, a bachelor's, or a master's degree, and the waive the application fee for Issues Etc. listeners. Learn more by clicking their logo at issuesetc.org and enter the promo code ISSUES, Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin online. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., it's part two of our interview with Dr. Angus Manoogian on nihilism. We'll discuss what does nihilism do to communities, what are the ways we can counteract nihilism, and what are the resources in Holy Scripture as the true sources of meaning and value and purpose in life. We'll talk about that tomorrow in Issues Etc., and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholz. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org.